Prime ministers
and presidents
may come and go, but the certainty of exemplary entertainment on the Midweek Drive
and the Midweek Drive Morning Edition
remains.
That's Lily Holloman, affecting an accent.
Reflections on the water, more than darkness in the depths. See him surface and every shadow. On the wind, I feel his breath. Golden eye, I found his weakness. Golden eye, he'll do what I please. Golden eye. Sweetness, but a bitter kiss will bring him to his knees. You'll never know how I watched you from the shadows as a child. You'll never know how it feels to be the one who's left behind. The tears I've cried, but now my time has come, and time is not on your side. See him move through smoke and mirrors, feel his presence in the crowd. Other girls, they gather. Shadows as a child. You'll never know how it feels to get so close and be denied.
You had Samantha Bond, you had Famke Janssen, you had Isabella Skoropko. All you really needed was Ben Lewis as opposed to Pierce Brosnan, and you probably have had the ideal cast for GoldenEye. What say you, Ben? You probably weren't even born.
I wasn't. Probably not when Tina Turner was singing that song at all either. I'm still a young soul.
Well, exactly. You see, I think 1995. Was GoldenEye when it
one year before.
Yeah, he's paving the way, you see. Anyway, time, it's just an illusion, and we could say that about Liverpool in so many ways, which I probably will just say, congratulations, sir, well done. You can tell the sincerity behind my voice that came through with respect to that. It was very, very positive. Indeed. Because clearly the major interest factor with the world today, and I say say this globally, no matter what time you're actually accessing this, whether it's early on via our podcast system, whether it's a case of, as occurred this week, I believe, where people might have tuned in to Siren on the Thursday morning and thought, it's not on. No, computer glitches meant it went out on Friday. I don't know. Once I've actually uploaded it and recorded it and put it out from that point of view, Ben, I absolve responsibility for distribution channels from that point of view.
The elves have been meddling with your system, clearly.
I put it down to coronavirus impact, which is a whole new world. And it's one of the reasons why, excitingly enough, we both, after last week's predictor challenge, actually have 2 points.
There
they are. Yeah, 2 points for a correct result. 3 points, yep, of course, for an absolutely perfect scoreline.
Only one of them was correct, wasn't it?
You got the Burnley versus Watford. You predicted 3-0. I said 1-1. In fact, the final result was 1-0 to Burnley. And Southampton-Arsenal, you said 1-0 to Southampton. I said 1-0 to Arsenal. Correct result, Arsenal 2, Southampton 0. Or nil, Southampton 0, Arsenal 2. And then, of course, we both went for 1-1 draws for Chelsea-Man City. Tragically, due to Fernandinho sending off, it was a 2-1 result for Chelsea.
He let you down, Alex. He let us both down. he let you down more so as a Man City fan.
But Brighton have been doing startlingly well. I mean, 4 points out of 6.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the perks of being a Brighton fan. You never have a clue what result's going to be. I was very surprised when I watched the Arsenal game. And to be honest with you, Arsenal could quite easily have won that game. They just didn't put it to bed, and Brighton obviously capitalised on the final chance at the end of the game. It's quite strange, really. But Man United on Tuesday, so who knows what's going to happen? Mm. But I don't think they'll win, Brighton. But I think they'll certainly give it a good shot with the momentum from the Arsenal game and the Leicester game as well. They've got a draw, so can't really complain, to be honest.
Certainly, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer seems to have had more than a stay of execution. He seems to have managed to, with some decent signings, Bruno Fernandes being one of them, and of course the other young players that are actually in there, Marcus Rashford, of course. Will he be the next Prime Minister? Well, he'll probably do better than, shall we say, our current incumbents, but let's not get political. Could be, as you say, an interesting game, which by the time this goes out, in some instances, unless you're listening to, say, one of the early release podcast, the result will be known. But then again, that's one of the reasons why to set this thing through, we're looking at a kind of time ahead. We clearly have got this FA Cup thing, but again, that's going to be a case of results will be known from that point of view. So I've decided to actually stay safe and go for matches on Thursday the 2nd of July for this particular one, which gives us Sheffield United versus Spurs. Sheffield United, who seem to have kind of tailed off in their form, and Jose Mourinho, who suddenly seems to be a nice guy again because he predicted that Harry Kane would score, and he did score.
He did. That was the first goal, I think, in 2020, was it, for Harry Kane?
Mm.
Yeah, long time. I think there's a Sheffield United Tottenham game. I think Tottenham will win again. I think they've got some good momentum behind them, and obviously some good players, key players, are back in the team. So I reckon probably 3-0 Tottenham, I think. It's going to be a bit of a big win for them.
You see, I've gone for Sheffield United 1, Tottenham Hotspur 2.
Okay.
And I appreciate that Emma might sort of think a little bit more about that. Emma, of course, who one of our regular midweek drivers, who may well return, actually, because we're working through a whole process of things and aspects and so on. And as you know, we've had lots of people being welcomed back over the last few weeks. So it all takes over.
Myself included.
Exactly. You know, one of the foundation stones. Manchester City versus Liverpool, in which I think we'll probably at least have the joy of a silent guard of honour for Liverpool if they force us to do the guard of honour, which we will.
They knew this was going to happen when they did the fixtures, didn't they? At the start of the season.
Always got to have some backup in place there. And if you need to establish a world-based pandemic to impact things, then clearly that could be there. No, that's a conspiracy theory. Let's not go there. Let's step away from that particular nugget of information and simply go for the prediction. I've been bold. I've said City will win 2-1, but you never know.
I think the other way around, actually. I think it would be a Liverpool 2-1 win. Only because I think Liverpool got a bit more behind them, and City would have had a bit of a setback from the loss earlier in the week, I think.
Hmm. Yes. I trust you're not referring to Newcastle United on that particular one, because that
would be... I'm not. No, no, no. just the Chelsea game, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, there you go. And the next one, of course, takes us into the other league that's still playing the Championship. It's Warnock's return in charge of Middlesbrough Football Club. People who are fans of Fly Me to the Moon will already know that Rob Nichols and myself produced a special mini-podcast to share Rob's thoughts in terms of how he views Neil Warnock as the possible saviour of Middlesbrough Football Club. Will he actually do what he did with Cardiff City, Rotherham, various other clubs, including arguably Queen's Park Rangers as well, and, of course, Sheffield United? Or will it be a case of the second of Tale of Two Cities? We'll obviously have seen Middlesbrough play Swansea City, and here they are away to Hull City. What's your prediction for this Championship relegation battle?
I'm not too sure on this one, to be honest with you, because I think
well, as a Brighton supporter, you have no interest in the lower leagues, clearly.
I do have interest in lower leagues, don't you worry.
Is it because they're both in the north?
Well, maybe that as well. But no, I suspect Middlesbrough will lose this one. Mm-hmm. I think it'll be very close, though. I think it'll be 2-1, a whole win.
Hmm.
Just because Hull have the home advantage, I think.
Well, my thoughts, I'm going for a 1-1 draw on that particular line.
1-1, so, I think, is fair as well, though.
Well, you're going for 2-1, I'm going for 1-1. There we are, they're locked in now. We have effectively locked in the results, and we will see whether the league actually improves or whether we'll be still neck and neck in a week's time. But Ben, what else have you been getting up to? Because clearly we're in this position now where lockdown is easing, and yet spikes are occurring across the United States of America. They're backtracking in terms of cinema openings. Disney have put back the release dates yet again for Mulan because they're needing to do that. Even though Wall Street are saying, release it on video, and so on. But there is that question, of course. Is any entertainment actually worth potentially risking your life for? And it is a case of fear that's coming through, despite what we're told. Oh, it's fine. It's 1 and a bit meters. Separate things from that point of view. Everything's prepared. What's the thought in Brighton, Ben, particularly as we've recently had some fairly warm weather? I know we'll have some thunderstorms as well, but what's your own thought in terms of the return to a form of post-coronavirus stuff?
I don't really know, to be honest. I'd be keen to get Richard Fitzwilliam's views on this, because I think cinemas...
He's up next on the show, so...
Well,
you know.
This is where you've got to ask, then, yeah. because I think... As with things like motor shows, we had problems with Geneva Motor Show.
Yeah.
And car brands have had to adapt accordingly to launch cars, which I think will do damage in the future to motor shows. Now, where I think about the sort of similar thing with cinemas is I don't think they'll die out, but I think it will affect quite a lot of cinemas, particularly the independent ones, more so than the chain ones. But I think if people are wanting to, you know, production companies want to adapt and they'll want to still make money, and the most effective way of doing that whilst people are still in lockdown is to show it digitally or, you know, by TV channels or anything like that you subscribe or pay to. Mm. And I wonder how it will affect the industry post-corona. But at the same time, part of me thinks people want that experience. But if you can only still get, if people are socially distancing to the end of the year, for example, then you can only get a certain amount of people in a cinema, in a theatre. Mm. So, realistically, will there be a lot of money to be made from that? I don't think so. I think they'll have to adapt and do something digitally or buy a TV channel or buy a subscription service. I don't know.
Other issues, of course, in Lincoln, clearly the wrong time to open up a new independent cinema, but that's the way things went. And as far as theatres are concerned, you're in that critical point insofar as their biggest earners are the pantomimes, and the pantomime season again may be completely wrecked because clearly all the announcements would have actually been made for the casting of most pantomimes and so on. So it's having a resonance and a ripple effect that's impacting on a whole variety of things. I was thinking, of course, as well of the very sad news, one of the places that benefited from your own work as an intern and a placementee. Bentley, of course, had to lay off an awful lot of their staff recently.
Yeah, they did. So. Yeah, I heard a lot about that, actually.
Yeah.
I know a few people affected by that as well. And it's just a shame, really, because it's a quarter of their workforce. And they're all lovely people and all fantastic people. As you know, if you've been there and you've seen what goes on. And it's a shame, really. But I guess, unfortunately, it's just the way that things are, this moment in time, and the car industry is suffering, you know, hugely from this, particularly in the UK. So we'll see how it goes going forward, but it's not a great sign for a lot of the industry.
Traditionally, of course, around about this time of year, maybe even earlier, we would have actually been talking about the scooter parade on the scooter front. Exactly, but that presumably unable to take part.
I suspect so, yeah. So I don't know all the ins and outs myself, but you can always have a chat with Dave if you want.
Well, that's a thought. We'll find out from Tessa Snott how she found the first virtual Lincoln show, which was online last week, of course.
Yes, I heard. I was unable to watch it, unfortunately. I don't know if you were able to as well, but I'd love to hear how it went.
Yeah. I suppose I could have, but then I wouldn't have been able to give my full attention to my Microsoft Teams meeting with respect to the University and of Lincoln and training sessions as well. I mean, so there you are, you're into this whole system. Ben, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic predicting link with us on the programme today?
I have had a reasonably interesting predicting telephonic link for you today.
Good, because effectively you've launched this Thursday show, if you're listening on sirenonline.co.uk or Siren 107.3 FM, any time of the day during the course of the week, if you're listening otherwise, because it'll be up fairly shortly. I take it you'll be back next week, same time, for your thoughts on Sheffield United, Spurs, City, Liverpool, and of course Hull City, Middlesbrough.
I will indeed.
To my name, hopped a bus, here I came. Could be brave or just insane, we'll have to see.
Cause maybe in that sleepy town, he'll sit one day, the lights are down, he'll see my face and think of how he used to know me.
Climbing these hills, I'm reaching for the heights, and chasing all the lights that shine.
Lights
that shine, they let you down.
Another day,
I'll get up off the ground.
Rhythms in the canyons that'll never fade away. The ballads in the barrooms left by those who came before. They say we gotta want it more. So I bang on every door.
And even when the answer's no, or when my money is running low, the dusty mic and neon glow are all I need.
And someday as I sing the song, a small town kid'll come along. That'll be the thing to push him on and go.
Thank you.
exuberance, effervescence, and vivacious. Opening sequence, of course, to La La Land, the classic that's been selected this week by our ace cinema reviewer. And we heard it from Ben Lewis a few moments ago, the man who probably would have some interesting views vis-a-vis would any of these movies be worth potentially risking your life for? Richard Fitzwilliams, welcome back to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. How are you?
Well, I'm very well indeed. And regarding cinema opening, which you referred to, and Ben mentioned the what's coming in the on the 4th of July, of course, cinemas will be reopening. Now, regarding how successful that's going to be, obviously we'll wait and see. But may I just first say that what will tempt us in July, there are three movies particularly. There is Christopher Nolan's spy movie, Tenet. There is the new Russell Crowe Unhinged, and also there is the Disney's Mulan, which all of those, and especially Nolan, most particularly wanted it on the large screen. And one of the things that I've noticed during this over 3 months is the fact that although there are, and we'll be discussing a couple of them, have obviously been quite a large movies, a number of movies streamed, there haven't been anything like the number that you might think there would have been. Most directors, most distributors do want to have that cinema distribution if they can possibly get it. And that is what we are waiting to see in July. The big question is how many people will be going to the cinema and how things will reopen in the urban centres, which is where you find the cinemas. Obviously, you know, the transport in London being in its present state, I went in this week and it was, I can only say that it was comparable to On the Beach. A film, by the way, in case listeners don't know, it's about the end of the world and the women in the streets.
Yes. I was thinking perhaps more in the case of the Omega Man and so on, but very, very, very strange from that point of view. Mulan, you mentioned Disney have already put the release date of Mulan back again because of the spikes that we're seeing in the United States. Is that going to affect overseas territories? I suspect so. Clearly, we're still in that unknown territory, Richard, when it comes to will it go, will it not go? And even though, as far as Mulan's concerned, I gather Wall Street have officially been advising Disney, release it on video, at least get some money coming in.
You know, it is impossible to predict unless you were one of Macbeth's witches. I mean, we've seen Tenet's date being put back, but that is the big movie. Regarding Mulan, it would be tragic if Disney did, as you mentioned. I mean, we don't know. And as you mentioned, these huge spikes in the States, to what extent that will affect international distribution, or whether indeed individual movies might be distributed in certain countries. The problem is, of course, with piracy, and of course then they might be streamed and so forth before release, if it was or if it did happen in the States, which is of course the major market that's intended. I mean the point is, of course, we simply don't know. And the other thing is that one has to remember that government statements are one thing. What actually happens is, of course, another thing. And although in the case of film, you can have several performances a day, of course, and you could have them all empty, you could have them all gradually getting more audiences. But when it comes to theatre, and the fact theatres can open but they can't have shows, then you have really, really serious problems. But as you say, it's a huge question mark.
One of our regular correspondents, we know him well, of course, Phil Leonis, has lots of insights in terms of this, obviously featured on his Chilpack Hollywood Hour. But sadly, this week, we have to pass on deep condolences to Phil Leonis because he sadly lost his father recently. So,
indeed. Yeah, I would like to be associated with that.
Of course, indeed. Movies this week, we've got three of them. We've got The Exuberance of Damien Chazelle's L.A., La La Land, I should say, an homage, a love letter to L.A. pre-COVID, an era only 3 years ago, of course, which almost seems a generation and centuries ago in terms of the images that are coming through within that and the fantastic work of Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone in that. Then we've got what I would say is the antithesis of La La Land, The Assistant, quiet movie about a huge strange topic, and certainly echoing the work of Weinstein, or the atrocities of Weinstein and so on, in a company which demonstrates a whole range of aspects, even though we never actually see the villainy perpetrated. It's all word of mouth, hearsay and such like. And there's another one as well. Where do you want to take us first, Richard?
Well, let's go to La La Land first, I think, because I agree with you, by the way, and it's wonderful that you said some nice things about it, because this was a movie which opened to rave reviews, a rom-com musical that, quite frankly, blew me away, and I thought also so well-structured about, for those who haven't seen it, an aspiring actress who meets an aspiring musician in Hollywood. A love letter to contemporary Tinseltown, gorgeous colours, and I thought a really jubilant traffic jams dance sequence initially, which was Another Day of Sun, and it never looked back as far as I was concerned. Emma Stone plays Mia. She wants to make it, and does she? Doesn't she? And with all the ups and downs there, difficult, very difficult. Ryan Gosling as Sebastian. Wants a steady paying job because he's a jazz fanatic. He and she, their romance, he wants to open his own club, loving jazz as he does, and she is determined to make it as a big star. It's one of those movies where the colours are glorious. It's one of those movies which literally beams with all the sun that you can conjure up, and it's also a very, very cleverly Damien Chazelle directs with a panache and style which left me, as it were, admiring climactically how beautifully he put this film together. I mean, this does sweep you up. The musical numbers, maybe not all of them, but certainly the likes of the Mia's and Sebastian theme, which going on in my head as I'm talking. City of Stars, which is a number that rather defines the movie. Excellent performances by John Legend, and also a nice cameo from one remembers Damien Chazelle's Whiplash, and J.K. Simmons, unforgettable in that. He appears briefly. It's an absolutely charming romance, and as I say, visually, it's so gorgeous, and you can see all that. Feel, always feel all that sun. And I have to admit, a large number of people did not agree with me, and it didn't win very famously, or should I say it did, and then it did at the Oscars, the famous occasion of Bonnie and Clyde opening the Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway, who are not young, opening that envelope at the Oscars, which in fact led to the famous victory of Moonlight. So this wasn't everyone's cup of tea, but it is an absolutely gorgeous concoction. And yes, it does seem a very, very long time ago, but you have two aspiring individuals, both so keen on different art forms, and you've also got the backgrounds of Hollywood used so beautifully. You've got numbers that I can tap my feet to. You've got a fascinating experience, and you've got Damien Chazelle as love letter to Tinseltown, and I'd put it up in lights.
Chemistry is something that's often talked about when it comes to the movie industry, and it was suggested that just as Spencer Tracy, Katharine Hepburn, Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers clearly had on-screen chemistry, this is something that Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling demonstrate in this, which I think was their third movie together, that they do have that chemistry that clearly is a huge appeal to audiences.
Undoubtedly, and I mean the scene of them dancing together, you find that on posters celebrating the joy of cinema. I mean, Emma Stone's Best Actress Oscar was absolute cert. And Chazelle won for Best Director, incidentally. Ryan Gosling's always excellent, and both of them, I mean, the chemistry there, it works a charm, it works a treat, and How well it works depends on whether or not you've got a lump in your throat at the end of the movie, which I will not reveal, but it's certainly a surprise.
It's a bit like Sliding Doors, the end of the movie. It kind of gives you two alternatives, really. Which one do you go for?
We mustn't even give a...
Well, I'm just suggesting. I'm just suggesting. That's all. A bit like Sliding Doors. Funny enough, the opening sequence also has a kind of musical resonance of the Muppet movie and the Rainbow Connection, which I think is interesting, which nobody's picked up on, but I just thought I'd mention that.
Not one that I admittedly would pick up, but I did find that from that opening sequence, as I mentioned another day of Sun, that was the tune, is the song, I mean, that is fantastic, and it's beautifully done. But this is a movie full of joy, and it's a love of Hollywood, a love of the of musicals. You've got all the homages in the world in this. And, I mean, the movie revels in this, whether it's posters on walls or whether it's up posters up in lights or whatever it might happen to be. But, yes, Ryan Gosling, excellent. Emma Stone, absolutely gorgeous. And a gorgeous movie, lovely to watch. A feel-good movie with its ups and downs, with poignant moments, as you would expect, with two deeply committed individuals. They're deeply committed to what they aspire to do, and what does life have in store for them. What indeed? It could even involve Paris, and it could also...
It may not. Chicken on a Stick or Seb's Place. That's the decision. Seb's Place or Chicken on a Stick. Seen it three times myself, would rate it 9 out of 10. Excellent sort of work all round. Let's move on to what I found was a very tough watch, but a worthy watch. And hats off to Kitty Green, who actually wrote and directed the next movie we're going to talk about, featuring Julia Garner. It's The Assistant.
Indeed, yes, and as you say, based on the Weinstein scandal, and having seen a play, David Mamet's Bitter Wheat, which was such an appallingly and silly play, with John Malkovich, was totally wasted in it, based on the dreadful Weinstein abuse, this is... it's a fascinating movie, and what I thought was so clever here was the pacing, the way you get to know this office. This is basically the daily activities of Jane, played by Julia Garner, who's a junior assistant in an American film production company, and one day she hopes to rise in the industry. She's only been hired for 5 weeks. She basically clears up in the mostly male office. She's seen as an appendage who's very largely ignored, but as you mentioned earlier, the sinister nature of this work environment, and as I say, we're introduced to it so cleverly. It's such an unobtrusive movie, and it's all the more effective because, for example, you do not see her boss, but you hear some of what he says and how it affects her mental health. You've got the symbolic presence, which is all the more effective for that, with supreme power over employees, and that's a really effective device. So when Jane meets a young waitress, Ruby, played by Mackenzie Lee, who's hired by the boss who's picked her up, but she's no experience, well, she's aware of what's going on and what should she do and what does she do. And there's a very good performance here by Matthew McFadyen as Wilcox, who is the head of human resources. It's certainly an inhuman firm, and when she goes to see him, what happens? What happens to her career? What decisions does she make? It is such a clever film, and I there wasn't a moment in this film which I felt was contrived. Once you got to know the environment and you started to get to know the people, and you could imagine what was happening off screen, which again, as I say, made it so effective. Very, very good performance by Julia Garner.
All it really needed was a cameo by Ricky Gervais, possibly, but there we are.
So, there's always that thought.
Well, indeed. Released originally last year at its world premiere at the Telluride Film Festival on August 30th, 2019, and then released January 31st this year. Available clearly online now.
Curzon Home Cinemas, yes.
Yes, and worth sort of accessing. Or indeed you can purchase it, which is worthwhile doing. Let's move to your third and final selection this week, Richard.
And that is Never Really, Sometimes Always. Quite a title, and when you see the film, you'll realize what the words, they're all questions, in fact, actually mean. It's directed by Eliza Hittman, and it's streamed at the same time as The Assistant, and two female helm films, both using an understated style and both highlighting injustice and prejudice and examining a woman's experience under such pressure. We meet Autumn Callaghan, played by Sydney Flanagan. She's a 17-year-old schoolgirl in Pennsylvania. She takes a pregnancy test locally. She's told she's 10 weeks pregnant. And then she's shown an anti-abortion video, and it turns out that she's been lied to. The rules in Pennsylvania mean that she needs parental consent to terminate a pregnancy. So she initially attempts to induce a miscarriage, and then when this fails, she, with the help of her supportive cousin Skylar, played by Talia Ryder, they buy bus tickets to New York. So it's a movie that, as we move to the various steps that she finds necessary, for example, she discovers she's 18 weeks pregnant. The abortion procedure in New York, and they've no money, takes 2 days. That Will Jasper, played by Theodore Pellerin, who they met on the outward journey, be able to help them? Are there complications? What of their return? And it is, and there's a searing honesty in the way this movie is tells its story. It's got an intended impact, and also Big City is set in the Big Apple, some of it, great deal of it. You can see how menacing they can become when they're symbolic of loneliness, when you know where to go. And there's this clinical documentary style, which is precisely why I like The Assistant and both movies, with such good performances. Sydney Flanagan's sensitive, expressive performance as Autumn, Talia Ryder, excellent as her cousin, very strong movies and very powerful. I would make the point that the timeline's a little confusing occasionally in this, but nonetheless, if you are looking for two serious films about topics that involve women in such a pressurized way, I would recommend both of them.
Released earlier this year, of course, January 24th, 2020, at the Sundance Film Festival. So clearly got the credits from that point of view.
Well, and it's highly rated. Both have been very well reviewed. This is streamed by Amazon.
As you're aware, Richard, I will still attempt in my persistence to say you should really check out Artemis Fowl, even though I've heard reviews this week which said if you do that, then you are a complete numpty, or words to that effect. But I think just for Dame Judi Dench's performance, I think it's well worth saying.
I'm not sure I agree.
You're not
going to go. I think we've moved on.
Okay. Well, I just put it out there. I'm sure you'll find one day you might sort of be able to push it up for the higher than 2 stars it's actually got so far. Meanwhile, any thoughts about the classic movie for next time?
Well, yes, I felt that Rosemary's Baby was a very good one.
That's interesting, because I thinking maybe Hacksaw Ridge, but you've gone a little bit further back in time. And in fact, because we started off with Gladiator, year 2000. We then moved on to The Devil Wears Prada, 2006. As we've just heard, La La Land was just 3 years ago. So going way back to the 70s. And presumably we're looking at the original Rosemary's Baby.
Oh, indeed, yes. Right. I didn't know it would be, but I didn't dare remake it.
It's there. All right, Rosemary's Baby will be the classic horror movie, and unusual for yourself, Richard, because I wasn't you're not a major horror fan.
I know that's true. Very true.
Anyway, that
and
will
also the King of Staten Island is our stream movie.
Sorted. Richard, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
I most certainly have.
Well, stay safe, and remember, one of the other aspects of film reviewing these days in the COVID-19 era is it's not worth dying for. Just watch it at home, honestly.
I wouldn't start chanting that. It might have, if you say it enough, rather like stay at home, help the NHS and save lives, people might, to the extent I'm making no judgment on any other individual, that London, but when I was on the tube early in the
park, I hope you were wearing a mask, Richard.
I was indeed.
Excellent.
You have to,
really. Yes, that's what I said. Yes,
but between Tottenham Court Road tube and Shepherd's Bush tube, I didn't see one single person either on a platform or get on a tube. Now, if it's like that and it goes past Oxford Circus and Bond Street, we have a lot of things to worry about.
Richard, be safe.
And you.
don't you ask them what they expect from you? Why don't you tell them what you are gonna do? You'll get so lonely. Maybe it's better that way.
Arguably a socially irresponsible lyric, but what the hey, he did have his hot rods, did Art Eddie, and why not indeed? As I believe Barry Norman might once have said, if you were wondering who was it, which film critic actually turned around and said, if you go and see or actually download Artemis Fowl, then you are, actually it was worse than numpty, it was a very, very worse thing, then check out the Starburst Radio podcast, because it was none other than Mike from, indeed, that aforementioned August magazine that actually said, just he was harsh about the whole system. The first ever Starburst podcast I'd actually listened to, I then went on to listen to part of Paul Mount. In the end, I sort of eased away after a short period of time, because amazingly, a new computer managed to actually download them without the hassle I've actually had of it just doesn't recognise it. Never mind, let's talk about Starburst, because I have a confession to make to our next guest, lead writer from aforementioned Starburst, Robin Pierce. How are you, Robin?
Hello there. I noticed you didn't mention that you ever listened to Piercing the Veil.
Oh, I know. That goes as red. I mean, clearly, that's I mean, but it's just on the Starburst website, starburstmagazine.com. You have as yet haven't worked through that, and this was the first time I clicked on it, expecting to say, can't access it, can't do this. But through the wonders of Microsoft Edge, I was actually put through, press play, and could actually listen to it. My first ever one, which was interesting.
See, welcome to the internet.
Again.
Or as you might call it, down there in Middlesbrough, to interwebs.
Yeah. Interesting line in terms of the last Starburst podcast, which clearly heads up the Empire Strikes Back. They talk about the Flintstones. They talk about the upcoming routine. I was so enamoured by that, do you know what I went and did, Robin?
What did you do?
I've only gone and subscribed. Whoa. I mean, I figured that the likelihood of me going into stores, as you know, I normally purchase it from stores because I prefer the covers and so on and so forth. But because of whatever is happening in terms of ease of lockdown, no lockdown and so on, the very notion of the old traditional browse through a newsagent. What's a newsagent? I can hear people saying. And accessing that thing. What the hey? I'll subscribe. So there we are. It's done.
Well, we did have to delay the latest issue.
To let me subscribe.
Yes.
Which was great.
There was no way of getting into shops. There's no way of people getting to the shops.
And clearly, Jordan,
Jordan
Royce editorial meeting. He said, "Look, if Alex left, you can't get it. There's no point us putting it out." So you know, I've now clicked the subscribe button. So sorted.
Well, I'm therefore glad because I think you're gonna really like the next issue, where we do one of our sort of collective things about the greatest sci-fi movies of all time, as voted for by the writing team.
Mm. So no sign of Artemis Fowl then, presumably. Go and see it. Go on. Go and see it. Honestly.
I haven't seen any of Artemis Fowl.
It's what Disney Plus is made for, surely. Go for it.
I've heard a lot about it. I've heard quite a bit about it when I was listening to the Midweek Drive last week.
Yeah,
but
well,
I haven't downloaded it yet.
We'll wait and see in part of this program, probably just after the in the second part, what Hannah Brown, whether she's taken that challenge. But yeah, interesting. Okay, you know what happens now, Robin? It's become a tradition that just as Ben Lewis is giving his sporting predictions and overviews, Richard Fitzwilliams his movie views. Interesting, he's going for Rosemary's Baby next week for his movie.
Ooh,
classic. Yeah. Now it's time for your critical analysis of last week's Midweek Drive, or whichever Midweek Drive you wish to download.
Actually, I may be a little bit cheeky here, a bit presumptuous.
Mm-hmm.
You may feel the need to slap me down.
Mm-hmm.
I went on the podcast yesterday.
Yes.
Because I like to do this on the day before I actually present.
Very good. Keeping it fresh.
All fresh, absolutely. Yeah. And I listened. I saw there was a 2.5 hour special.
Yes.
And I thought,
bonus, yeah.
And there was another one which lasted about an hour.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, okay. Mm. I plumped for the 2.5 hour special.
Yeah, very good choice. There might be another one next week. Yes.
I cherry-picked the hour special.
Okay.
More of that later.
Yeah.
The 2.5 hour special did not disappoint at all, did it?
I felt it was like, you know, back in the day, and I think we're chronologically of the period of time where we can remember those bumper summer specials that used to be produced and used to keep us occupied for hours of time, whether it's Spider-Man swinging against the Blackpool Tower or whomever.
Yes. And you had an all-star cast, and I looked at the blurb on Podbean, of course, and saw who was on. I thought, so many voices from, you know, our live shows, which we all love doing. And that it just sealed the deal. And I spent a glorious Friday morning just... I was sat here in the study with just a big grin on my face. Aww. So let's kick off with Professor Robert Richardson talking about robots.
Perfect name, isn't it, really? I mean, I had to allude to 5XL5. I don't think he got that, actually.
You preempted me. See, he can be Robert the Robot, but I've always got to be Robbie.
Yeah, excellent.
Now then, using him as a smart tool, that's good. But, of course, What fascinates me is the singularity. Now, you probably knew. As soon as you said that word last week, you probably knew that I would pick up on this, because I always do, because the singularity is one of those things that it just fascinates me. The belief that, of course, robots and AI will evolve beyond us. We will evolve and create something that's beyond our own biology. And the school of thought that says it's inevitable, particularly when you consider how humans have behaved during the pandemic. Yes, I'm looking at a bunch of football supporters firing rockets at their own Liver building.
Mm.
Yes, I'm looking at Bournemouth Beach. Yes, we are the instruments of our own undoing. We seem to be skipping merrily toward the singularity, I think, because technology is moving along so rapidly. I remember when new technology was introduced, I was working on computers, and we were impact testing and beta testing the new systems, and we were told to tell the other workers that this was going to be absolutely fantastic. It would do all the menial office filing tasks and, you know, all this stuff that nobody really wanted to do but were paid to do. And they'd be spared the menial, repetitive. And, of course, I was telling people at the time, that's another word for unemployment. And, of course, people would retire, they weren't replaced, and numbers went down, unemployment figures went up. Be careful what you wish for, people. Be careful what you wish for. Anyway, going on to David Fox. It astounds me how you have David Fox in the studio and he does magic tricks on the radio, and it's relevant and it works. Because I remember, I think we've talked about this before, when I was a child, we had on BBC Radio 2, I think we had Ray Allen and Lord Charles, and it was a ventriloquist act, which never worked on the radio. So David Fox does work on radio, and I'd love to see one of his magic shows on Zoom, actually. Graham Harper, the funniest joke in the world. I loved that joke, but I thought you were going to go down the Monty Python sketch of the funniest joke in the world. Do you remember that one?
A long time ago, but no.
My dog's got no nose.
How does he smell?
Terrible. And that was the funniest joke in the world. In the world, and actually, they used it as a weapon in the Second World War, according to the Monty Python team. You were full of really bizarre facts, weren't you? Like uncopyrightable, having 15 unrepeated letters. You know that's going to stick in my head.
I thought it would be useful for journalists the world over, you see.
I have two facts to bewilder both yourself and Graham, if you'd be so kind as to pass them on. Did you know that Welsh has an additional two vowels? Our vowels in Welsh, because I'm a Welsh speaker, are A, E, I, O, U, and additionally W and Y.
And that's the reason, clearly, you're a little bit more hesitant when it comes to ease of lockdown procedures. It's the extra vowel makes all the difference.
Of course. Did you also know that the letter J does not exist in the Welsh alphabet? Yet Jones is reckoned to be a Welsh surname and is by far the most common surname in Wales.
We could go on for hours, Robin. Sadly, we've just got five
minutes.
Stop
that one then. Okay. Eloise Sheehan, good to hear another take on reviewing the shows. She is a great reviewer. I've worked on content for Sci-Fi Weekend magazine with her, and I'm hoping I can wear her down to write some content from my website at some time. But as you close that section off, I didn't know that Katie Cassidy from The Flash...
Arrow,
was David Cassidy's daughter.
Yeah.
Because David, of course, played the Mirror Master on an episode of The Flash in 1992.
Indeed.
Absolutely. Rachel Abbott, you were talking about the Beetlejuice long-rumoured sequel. I remember it being announced originally a year after Beetlejuice came out. It was going to be called Beetlejuice in Love. But now, of course, it's confirmed we're going to see Keaton as Batman before we'll see him as Beetlejuice. And that is nothing but great news, as they're going to bring Flashpoint to the big screen. Let's see, Jessica Burtis, I could go for the Idic salute rather than handshake, because I don't like clammy handshakes. Beth Gulliver, another great familiar voice from the past, now she's in Wales, sadly, way down there at the other end, so we are unlikely to cross paths, unless I go and stalk. Arthur Weingarten, Annette Andre, was it great to hear them as a team? Because usually you have them on separately, but I thought, what a nice double act. You mentioned May Gray, and whereas I don't remember the BBC series, I was, you know, busy being born and up to the age of 3. But I do know that star Rupert Davis used to holiday around this area where I live. Phil Linus, you kept asking people, are you wearing designer masks or blue? Me, I'm a designer mask person.
The skull.
I have the lower half of a skull, yes. So, okay, Tessa Snart's Tune of the Week is what I cherry-picked off the other one. I give it an 8 out of 10. Thank you, Carrington McDuffie. And the Contributor of the Week, Arthur Weingarten and Annette Andre, the team to beat.
Sensational. Robin, set to do it all again next week?
Absolutely.
Brilliant.
Talk to you soon.